Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Welcome to the show. If this is your first time here, welcome. And also, this is the final episode of 2018. I hope if this is your first time here that you will join us more in the new year. We'll be back right in the new year of 2019, but this is the final episode for this year. And if you've been here before, welcome back. I absolutely appreciate you being here, as always, and I hope to be better today than I was the last time you heard me. My guest today started out by getting a business degree and then working in the manufacturing industry for a couple of years, but then she went back to school to study industrial design. Then she began her career designing products such as medical equipment and furniture before stumbling onto luggage design. And since then, she has worked for companies such as Puma, Debenhams, and consulted to Amazon Fashion. During all this, she was living above a bike shop in East London, and she's an avid cyclist herself. When she saw a gap in the market for fashion-inspired bike bags, so she wanted to fill this gap. She wanted to design something that women cyclists would appreciate. And after designing prototypes and setting up manufacturing in China, she founded Good Ordering. With a simple desire to create and a successful crowdfunding campaign to get started, Good Ordering has been successfully running for the past 5 years. Now, let's hack Jackie Ma. As we approach the end of 2018, I would love for you to stop and ask yourself, did you accomplish everything that you wanted to accomplish this year? Maybe you've noticed that there are just not enough hours in the day to get all of your tasks done. And if you are trying to get them all done, these tasks will take time away from the important things that you need to be doing. You could hire an assistant, yes, but sometimes that's just not right for all of us. Sometimes it's just too much work and too much expense. This is where Finn comes in, because Finn is a high-quality, on-demand assistant that handles all of your administrative aspects of your life and your business so that you can focus on what matters most. Like the best assistants, Finn knows your preferences, remembers the people that you interact with, and integrates with your email and calendar. Finn can make calls, send emails on your behalf, pay bills, remember important dates, and automatically just get things done for you. If you're someone who doesn't have 40 hours of work for an assistant every week, here's the best part. Finn is available on demand, and this actually is the best part. You only pay for the minutes that you use. Once you try Finn, you're going to love it as much as I do. I want you to hit the ground running in 2019. So as a listener of my show, I've arranged for you all to try Finn absolutely for free. Just use this link, finn.com/hack, finn.com/hack. And you can try Finn absolutely for free so you can see the power firsthand of having the best assistant available for you whenever you need. Try it for free and hit the ground running in 2019. Go to finn.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Hi there, John.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's good. Life is okay today.
Nice. It's a day. We've been struggling to get onto this call for a few months. You've been a busy person, but it's great to have you. And I think we should just jump straight into this. So Jackie, you do a lot of different things. You're a very, very, very busy person. Today we're talking to Jackie, the entrepreneur. So Jackie, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would probably say say that it's just about kind of being vulnerable and like kind of asking for help. And I don't know, I guess just trying to be as real as I can with everything that I do, like a lot of stuff that I have no idea about that I kind of admit. And I've had a lot of, I don't know, just I guess not good mentors and people help me along the way. And I think just that being open has attracted some nice collaborations and things like that. So I guess it's that kind of openness.
Nice. And that comes naturally to you?
Yeah, to strangers, weirdly enough. You know, like I'm very, come across, you know, much nicer to strangers than all my like close friends and family. I'm just joking. But I guess, you know what it's like when it's sometimes easier to talk to a bunch of people than just one kind of person. I focus on myself, but I think I'm a pretty open person.
Nice. And this idea of mentors, you said, is this something you've picked up along the way because through necessity or just by chance?
My early mentors were kind of bosses at work when I've had like full-time jobs and people who have helped me out along the way. And then they've kind of stayed as kind of important people in my life. So then over time, I've realized that they are important and I can learn so much from one short conversation with someone who's been there and done that than me reading 10 books or listening to 50 podcasts. So I think that in the later years, I have seeked it out, and I've also kind of been a mentor in some ways to other people as well. So I think it's just sort of passing on that information and experience. And I think this, it's particularly important for women as well, because it's not just passing on business contacts and practical things, but it's also just being really encouraging that I think women entrepreneurs really need.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that sort of paying it backwards or forwards to other people as people have helped you. So can you, this idea of, I mean, having mentors that were bosses at the time, that's to me really fascinating. And I'd like to get into that, but can you sort of just explain to the listener how the process, like how you went from working full-time into running your own company?
Well, naturally I'm, I guess, compared to some hardcore kind of entrepreneurs, and I have been to talks where people are like, a real entrepreneur, unless you stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning and there's no way you can have a relationship, and really hardcore. So I'm quite mild. So I guess in the whole kind of my journey, I did work full-time for big companies for a long time, but I've always had little side projects. And then over time, that balance has kind of gone more onto the side projects. And then I originally started my business, Good Ordering, which is the cycling bags, whilst I was still working full-time for a company. So it carried on for sort of 3 years while I was working full-time. And then eventually I kind of went down in days, and still now I'm doing bits and pieces from that kind of world as well. So I think it's very much, it was a very like blended transition for me.
So you've always had side just things going on. That's sort of your style.
I think so. I mean, even just like when you think when I was a kid, and my parents never gave us pocket money. So I had to work or earn pocket money from making cookies in the holidays, and all the way through to when I first moved to London from Sydney. London's such an expensive place to live that I had to have other jobs. So one of my early jobs was one of my early side projects. I worked for a big company, Puma, designing bags. I'd go to China every few months and I would buy these other leather bags and sell them on eBay just for some extra money that I just needed, that extra bit of money every month to pay the bills. So whether it be like design work or whether it be just plain old kind of hustling, there's always been a reason, because I love living in cities and cities are naturally really expensive. So I guess it came from there.
So you just had to have the hustle to be able to afford that extra cost.
Yeah.
I love the idea of the hustle, and I don't like the idea of staying up till 4 a.m. all the time. That's total nonsense, I think. But this whole mild entrepreneur, I like that. That's a good title.
Yeah, the mild entrepreneur. That would be a best seller. It'd be like the most, everyone would just like leave it on the bottom shelf.
Exactly. So taking like working for companies like Puma and working like being their designer, and then deciding to, like, it's one thing to buy bags in China, bring them back to London and sell them on eBay. But it's a whole other thing to like design your own and then have them manufactured for you. Like, it's a big step into, there's easier side hustles, I guess I should say. So what sort of pushed that sort of next step of doing something bigger?
Well, we're lucky I think we're just so lucky with technology and things. So I've been working with a lot of factories in China and had a lot of kind of personal mini like credit notes, if you know what I mean. Like, so when after you go to China and go to the factories all the time, you get to know the people there and you form personal relationships with them. So I knew that if I wanted to design some bags, I could get them sampled. And getting bags sampled is really the first step to launching a brand, because you only need samples to sell, to pre-sell or to take nice photos and to do some market research. So it was really just about getting to that first stage. So I guess in the evenings and weekends, I started designing a range of bags and then approached some of the manufacturers that I knew. And I said, will you sample these? And they did. And you got them up to samples, what we call like final samples. And then that's when I did a crowdfunding, like on Kickstarter, to raise the money that I needed to place the first order. And luckily, I had no idea what I was doing. So if I had, then I would have been. But in my mind, it was just about kind of getting to that first stage.
Wow. And so you get the final samples, and then were you advised by somebody to use Kickstarter, or did you just think, hey, I should try this?
Yeah, I just opened in the UK. It was like literally I had my project ready and it was about to like press the button. So my campaign was one of the first ones in that was open to the UK. So it was kind of like, it was this, you know, latest thing. It wasn't really that long ago, but it was a kind of exciting new thing that people were using to raise money to start their own businesses. And it was pretty obvious that that's what I should do.
It's nice when timing works out like that. And was it, I'm assuming so, but was it like a success beyond what you imagined, or was it kind of just what you needed and then you moved forward?
Yeah. It was like dragging myself over the finish line. Like, I just had no idea what I was doing and I did everything. Like, I even put money in it myself and like whatever you need to do to make it work. And I think I was trying to raise £12,000 or £14,000. So it wasn't a huge amount and I had savings as well. So I wouldn't, you know, by any means call it a success. And I'm still very impressed by some of the projects that launched on Kickstarter that really smashed their targets. And now there's a whole science behind it and strategy. So if I was going to do it again now, it would be completely different.
Okay, fair enough. And I mean, yeah, the crowdfunding industry has changed as well. Like you said, it's a short period of time, but things do change sort of rapidly in that. I'm guessing so, but within the design industry, there's no sort of like conflicts of interest or things like with you starting your own brand while also working?
That's a really good question. I mean, when I was working for Puma, I signed away all my design rights. So if I was designing on a holiday or in the middle of the night, they all apparently belonged to Puma. So yeah, that would be a no-no. That's why I just sell bags on eBay. But when I went to work for another company, which is a trend forecasting company called WGSN, my role turned from a design role to more a kind of editorial, journalistic research kind of role. So I was putting trends together rather than designing bags. So there were, luckily at the time, there were a few other people in the company who had side hustles. It was on a turn where it was acceptable to do other stuff. So there was like colleagues who were writing books. There were colleagues that were teaching on the side. And I was pretty upfront about it from the beginning. So, yeah.
So that was sort of a reason to be able to work for them rather than for Puma, because they owned all your designs no matter when you made them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting concept, but that's cool. So going from this, I mean, with good ordering was then it's for cyclists, right? So are you a cyclist too?
Yeah, I like to think of it like it's for people who ride bikes. And I know it's just being nitpickety, but it's like people, like you think about like Amsterdam and Copenhagen and more so like increasingly London. It's people who kind of ride a bike as part of their transport routine. And I wouldn't call myself a cyclist in the way that kind of conjures up images of Lycra and having those trackers that show how many miles you've ridden and all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't really care about that at all. So it's just efficient seeking people who want to get somewhere from A to B a bit faster and want to, like, riding a bike for me has always been about it being efficient. And in London, it's the quickest way sometimes to get from A to B, even faster than a cab or faster than a car. So I guess it's good ordering is for busy people who live in cities who may happen to ride a bike as part of their transport routine.
I love that. Wow. So I ride a bike. I've never thought of it as, you're right, I've never called myself a cyclist in my life. And I've actually like gotten mad and just been like, why can't people just like just ride their bike? Why do they have to turn it into a lifestyle? Like, you're just going across the city. Like, why do you have to?
Exactly. You don't call yourself a walker or like a runner. No, you just walk, you know. And that's like, I think it's the mindset that really needs to change for more people to cycle and not feel like they have to, oh, I'm not prepared or I'm not psychologically ready to cycle. It's not really, it shouldn't really be like that.
Exactly. And so that's a good way to put it. So basically you were designing a product for yourself.
Yeah. And my friends.
And your friends, and trusting that there was more people outside of London who would also think like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fair enough. How many did you, so to get a bag like this designed to prototype, I believe you called it, to final samples, and then I guess manufactured, how many like do you have to do sort of in a batch or a lot?
Yeah, I guess when you're getting stuff made in China, it is changing, but I guess I would order like a lot of bags. So a typical order might cost me about 50,000 pounds. So that's also because that's what I needed to get efficiencies. So it's not like the factory is going to say, no, we're not going to make 500 bags. It's more like they'll say, if you make 500 bags, it'll cost this much. But if you make 1,000 bags, it'll cost this much. So yeah, it's always been a kind of big investment. And it's not just about the cost of the manufacturing. It's about shipping. You know, you put your stuff in a container and it sails over the seas to here. So once you kind of decide, for me, once I decided to get the stuff made in China, which was going to bring the price down to an affordable level, I really had to commit that my product was a mass market product. It couldn't be a niche product or couldn't be too niche.
Right. And that's like, that's a huge, I guess, risk in the sense where there's a lot of businesses you can start where you don't really need any inventory up front.
Yeah, I think I'm an idiot. I don't know why I'm doing this.
That's not what I was getting at, but I like that was the hurdle in front of you and you went for it anyways.
Yeah, because the thing is, right, my friends aren't going to buy, they're not cyclists in inverted commas. They're not going to buy a bag that costs 150, 200 pounds. They wanted a bag that would cost, like I kind of started at the price. So I wanted to sell a nice, cool bag for 65 pounds. And that was my very simple kind of goal. And in order for it to sell at that price, then XYZ, I had to make this many, I had to get it made here. And it kind of defined everything else that kind of flowed from it. I mean, I just, because of my time in WGSN where I was researching bad brands and researching trends, there's so many brands out there that make beautiful, beautiful products, but they're not really affordable or they're made from really nice, expensive leather. And so you're not going to buy it and ride through the rainy weather and mud with it.
Fair enough. And so it had to be, I guess, utilitarian enough that it worked, but also designed well for your audience.
Yeah. And the pricing was just like such a key thing because I really, you know, you can buy these kind of bags. Say mine was selling for 65 pounds. Most people would, their top price would be 40 pounds. So I was already kind of pushing people to appreciate the design a bit more for these kind of products.
And was that conscious on your part, Jackie, or was that just a necessity that they needed to be at that price point?
About the 65 pound thing.
Yeah, compared to 40. Like, I mean, some people are like, my brand is just going to be a higher end brand or a mid-range, you know what I mean? Or was it just necessary?
Yeah, I think that the low end, so the 40, I wouldn't be competing against supermarkets and Amazon, but that was way too crowded. And then I think it was more a subconscious thing that I sort of felt there was a space in the mid market kind of area.
So yeah. it wasn't testing, it wasn't trial, it wasn't error.
No, it was just me just kind of designing it.
I love it. So the first customers for that first order came from Kickstarter and that got you sort of attention. Where do customers come from today?
So, I mean, I still have my market stall at Broadway Market, so I'm there pretty much every Saturday selling face-to-face. I guess about 50% still come from the UK, and the more saturated an area is. So I live in East London, so there's a lot more bags around there than, say, West London. But I guess I am growing that, you know, it's about 50% online as well. So I'm kind of trying to reach that kind of market, the exact person that I want, but all over the world. So, for example, a typical customer of mine might be a freelance graphic designer or an architect or someone who works in, I don't know, like publishing or media. That's kind of one chunk of my customers. And then another chunk of my customers are teachers and nurses, professional people. They don't really care about brands, so they don't need the latest Prada handbag, but they have a fairly good income and they appreciate nice design. So that's my customer.
And what sort of plans do you have to, if half your sales are online right now, and obviously you have East London sort of covered by, I mean, physically selling them yourself on Saturdays, do you have sort of a plan or a strategy in mind to now go sort of like worldwide with it? Like, is it like, should I take over New York City next? Should I do this? Or is it just go for everyone or anyone?
Yeah, if you have a strategy for me, I'd love to sit here. But I think that I have certain target geographical areas. So, for example, Germany, and Germans do like the bags because they're quite boxy and square and they've got lots of pockets and very practical. And I do have a lot of German customers. And then I'm growing the kind of Asia. So South Korea, I have a big distribution network, and Japan, Japanese really like them. So I guess there's certain countries that there's probably like top 3 to 5 countries that I'm pinpointing. And then that's also where I throw my money for like digital marketing and where I will do my trade shows. And because I think that like if there is a strategy at all, it's about finding an area and trying to saturate that area a bit more, because then it becomes like a thing in that area. And or even schools. So there's certain schools where a lot of the kids have good ordering bags. And there's certain like kind of that kind of idea of like, oh, Jimmy's got one of those bags, and my birthday's coming up, so I want one too. So I think that because the bags are quite weird looking, you know, they are kind of quite, they're not everyone's taste. It really, I need to be quite like sort of targeted at where I aim them.
Yeah, they're really, really, really unique. I think they look brilliant, but yeah, they stand out as something different. So the idea would be that if you can get enough in a school or enough in a city or enough in a country, you can kind of hit a tipping point where people now themselves are asking, where does that bag come from?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, exactly.
And when you say like throwing digital marketing dollars at, say, picking a country, say Japan, is that like pay-per-click, like just buying advertising, or is there something more nuanced?
Yeah, no, it's a kind of connected approach. So it's, for example, like to spend the money, yeah, like targeting certain geographic areas on like, say, Google Shopping or Facebook. But alongside that, then I'll write, say, like blog posts that relate to that area or might appeal to that. So I kind of, it's not like it's all written down in terms of strategy, but it's my feeling that all the activity, a bunch of activity has to be kind of related to that consumer as well to support the money spent.
Right. That makes sense. But all those sales, they happen through your website, which might be a Shopify site, or it used to be?
Yeah, it is a Shopify site, yeah.
Okay, and then the sale comes through today. Say 10 sales come through. Do they go to you? Like, is there a distribution hub, or is that like your apartment?
Yeah, so no, I have a warehouse up in Derbyshire, which is like 4 hours drive from London. And I've been working with them for a long time. So I guess, yeah, so when my kind of container comes in, it goes there, and then they send out all the orders. And I'm more and more automating things. So now I don't really have to touch the order. So we do personalized bags as well. So when they're personalized, then we do them and we, you know, put the initials on. But more like 80% of orders I don't know about. And then I even actually stopped my notifications because I used to have this cha-ching sound on my sale, which I loved, and it was very reassuring. But then I found it a bit distracting because, not because there were so many of them, it was more just because I was getting distracted by like individual sales when I was actually trying to focus on like wholesale or problems. And I'm just focused on solving problems and try not to get too caught up in like good stuff all the time.
Right. And just, I mean, to be clear, Jackie, that's something I think most of us go through. That cha-ching sound on your phone is reassuring at first.
Love it.
But at some point, it just needs to go. So when you say we, is there a team to this, or is it you pushing this all forward in your warehouse team?
Yeah, it's mainly me, and I've got like freelancers that I work with. So I'll have like someone who does my digital marketing, but he's an expert in that, and he has his own company. I have someone who I work with who does like all my customer service and bits and pieces like that. And then she works kind of remotely, but we meet up every now and again. So there's probably about, I don't know, in all, like maybe 3 or 4 people. Then I've got my accountant. So I think it's like, I like the idea of, because I'm from Australia and my partner's from Sweden and we live here and we've got 2 kids. And I don't want to have an office. Like I escaped working for big companies because I hate fluorescent lighting and sitting at a desk eating your lunch. And so I just, my whole goal is to have everyone working kind of remotely, and hopefully it kind of, all the dots will match up.
Yeah, I like that. So no sort of actual employees, but they're consultants and I guess freelancers who can do their job really, really well. So that brings us to sort of you in the middle of this. I mean, you have 2 children, you are running this, you have freelancers and consultants working with you. You're a busy person. Saturdays you go and physically sell. What sort of division of sort of, I guess, separation of what you do now is outright sort of sales as a percentage and then sitting down designing new products?
Well, I wish I could design more products because I really enjoy doing that. But I think that for good ordering, because it's sort of limited by cash flow and orders, I knew that, and I probably put myself into this situation, but I really design the product to be quite timeless in the way that I don't have to get rid of products. So I kind of knew that I was in this situation having to order lots of product from China. So I didn't want it to be too seasonal. So whilst I don't have to design that often, I would like to. I mainly am doing sales and marketing and kind of collaboration-y type things at the moment. And then also because I could take care of all the production and just like liaising with the factory and QC and designing all the packaging. And yeah, I mean, in a way, I would love to be able to switch it up so that I'm designing more products on like shorter runs. And that's what I'm moving towards in the future, I guess.
Nice. So, I mean, that makes sense to go into it knowing I need to design products that last so that every season I don't need to create new products because the funding just isn't there for it. So does that, or like moving forward, is like from your perspective, Jackie, is good ordering something that you will be doing in 1 year, 2 years, 5 years from now? Or are you still sort of working off like certain quote unquote success type metrics to, I guess, to decide if this is something you want to continue moving forward, say in a year from now, in 2 years, in 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I get a bit depressed about this because I know that the business hasn't been growing at a certain rate that it needs to grow to look really attractive to investors and that kind of thing. I'm definitely in the world of looking at exit, but at the same time, I'm really aware of the place the business is at the moment. And so I'm really struggling with this idea of, is this a lifestyle business for me? Or is it a business that I want to like ramp up and potentially sell? And I'm really, really stuck in the middle because I can't figure it out. And this is something that just keeps going around in my head. But at the same time, I'm doing as well as I can to sort of grow things. So part of me, the little voice in my head is saying, you've got an amazing business that people love and you're contributing to positive things in society. And I work completely flexibly. I don't have to miss out on anything, any of my kids' school stuff. So I'm trying to actually own the term lifestyle business, which I used to take as a kind of derogatory term. And I'm coming to terms with that, I think.
Okay. I prefer to call it a business lifestyle, but because lifestyle business really, I don't know, it does. It's a strange term, but that is sort of what it seemed. That's why I guess I wanted to ask that question. But when you said, like deciding whether it should be a lifestyle business or actually ramping and scaling up rapidly, do you think that decision would be made for you if you all of a sudden, like tomorrow, sat down and had a plan for scaling? Would you just go for it all in?
Yeah, I mean, I have. And I have like in the past, recent past, been talking to investors and I have my pitch deck and all this kind of stuff. And as I was saying to you a little bit earlier in the conversation, then I had this like health thing. So basically like, 2 weeks ago, I got diagnosed with breast cancer, which is like, well, and it just made me rethink a lot of things in a way. And actually, I just now, right now, I'm literally having to like go through treatment and stuff. So I've just had to put that on hold, and I might come back to it. I'm still really, really kind of committed to the plan. And I know what my plan would be starting from the point at which I would get investment. But it's just executing on that right now. I'm just not in the right place to do it right now.
Wow. I didn't know any of this. I feel bad like we're even doing this call right now, Jackie.
No, this is the kind of stuff that you think that when something like this happens, everything changes and I'm going to go like move back to Australia or something. But actually life just, you know, tips along, and I'm lucky that I really love what I'm doing. So sort of a bit undramatically and a bit like slightly, I wish that it would have a much more like a bigger impact on everything, but actually it hasn't really changed that much, to be honest.
It's a bit underwhelming.
Yeah. Exactly.
It doesn't completely transform your life in that way. That's really, really interesting. Well, Jackie, this has been a fascinating conversation that I know I've really enjoyed and that people out there listening have really enjoyed. We've got to talk about good ordering sort of throughout the conversation, but could you now give people sort of the quick pitch about like what your product is and who it's for and then where they can find it online?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, with good ordering, the brand's all about getting more people to rediscover the joy of cycling and, you know, reconnect with their bicycles. And our products are like feel good products that make people excited about getting on their bikes. And we just like to be more like, in a way, I want to be more of a community than an actual sort of bag company. But yeah, you can find us on Instagram, which is really, really addicted to our Instagram account, Good Ordering, one word, and it all comes from ordering well when you're eating, or our website, so goodordering.com.
Oh, and it comes from ordering well when you're eating. I like that. I like that. So goodordering.com, or on Instagram, you can track down Good Ordering as well, which then also leads to Jackie's Instagram as well. I will link to all those in the show notes for you so that they're there. When you're done riding your bike or whatever it is you're doing right now, you'll be able to track it down there. So Jackie, once again, I do appreciate you stopping by. I'm glad we finally got to find this time. And just please keep doing what you're doing, because it really is awesome to watch.
Oh, thank you so much, John.
All right. That was a fun conversation that I thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed as we wrap up this year on Hack the Entrepreneur. But before we wrap up, we still have to go back through this conversation. There was a lot of things that Jackie said, a lot of things that sort of caught my ear, that probably caught your ear as well. But we have to do the hard work now. We have to go back and we have to pull out just one of those things. We have to pull out one of those things, and we have to turn it into the hack. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I just had no idea what I was doing, and I did everything. Like, I even put money in it myself, and like whatever you need to do to make it work.
And that's the hack. Jackie. I love this on its own, but I love this for wrapping up the year, for wrapping up 2018. Because if you're out there listening and you maybe think that you don't know everything you need to know to do what it is you want to do, to start that business, to launch that crowdfunding campaign, whatever it happens to be, this is years later. And yeah, Jackie's still trying to go through this and still trying to get it to where she wants it to be, but she admits that she had no idea what she was doing. She sort of threw herself in and figured it out. That's really like the only way that we can do it. There's no way to know what to do until you do it. When you do it, you learn. The more you do it, the better you get at it. But this is so, so, so crucial to any of this business talk, entrepreneurship, just creating a product and selling it. It takes action. It takes you being comfortable enough with yourself, even when you don't know what it is exactly that you're doing or exactly where it is you want to be going. It's just taking action. Even small, consistent action at this time next year will completely transform where it is you are. And with that, I thank you so much, Jackie. So there we are. The end of 2018, the end of another great conversation. I thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. If there's anything that you want to do for us, like just spend a couple minutes and maybe go and leave one of those ratings or reviews, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, wherever it happens to be that you're listening to this right now, it is super, super helpful if you just go and leave one of them reviews. It takes a couple minutes, helps the show, ends us on a good year, everyone's happy. All right. Well, it's been fun. There is a lot of stuff we have planned for you in the new year. I'd love to help you accomplish the things that you want to accomplish and take you to the places that you want to go. I hope you'll stick around. I hope you're checking out the blog because there's a lot of new stuff we've been publishing on there. We've been kind of busting our asses, creating stuff that is going to help you to take the next step and to start the business that you want or to take your business to where you want it to go. So make sure you check that out. Get onto the email list at hacktheentrepreneur.com because that's where we will email you every time a new article comes out so you don't miss it. It's every couple weeks right now. We're putting almost 30 hours into each article right now. It's kind of bonkers, but we've got great feedback and we're going to keep doing it heading into the new year. So with all that said, I hope you have an amazing holidays. I hope you enjoy your time with your family, your friends, yourself, whoever it happens to be, your dog, your cat, all those things. It's been fun. I appreciate it so much. I'm going to be now taking a couple weeks off, and I hope that you'll join me when we hit the ground in 2019. And until then, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.